Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Slapcast. This is episode 12 of our coverage of the 2022-23 season. I'm your host, Gage, as usual, and I must come to you in an apologetic light on this particularly spooky afternoon, as we had to cancel last week's episode in the event of some what I would describe as ill-timed personal conflicts as far as the podcast is concerned. The good news, however, is that I am joined by the entire contingent today. I'm going to start by introducing Josh, because you're the healthiest of the three options that I have. Josh, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I am thankfully quite healthy as well.
Not
but
sick.
We are joined by two plaguers on this afternoon. The gentleman afflicted by a mystery disease, which has been dummying you, unfortunately. But how are you guys feeling?
Honestly, today has been a lot better than the past few days, but I think I'm still struggling a little bit, but I think I'll be fine within a few days.
Yeah, today has been the best day for me, but I've been dying still.
Yeah.
And I will not be in class tomorrow, possibly Wednesday.
Yeah.
That is, of course, Ethan and Reese that you heard from. We're all here and excited to be back. And Josh allegedly has come up with two questions of the day for us, which I'm either confused, worried, or excited for. I'm honestly not 100% sure. So,
I think confusion and excitement are the right feelings. You shouldn't be scared for this one. So, it's Halloween. Happy Halloween, everybody at home. Even though y'all are listening to this in November, the turkey month, which is my favorite holiday. But beside the point, we'll get to that in a couple weeks when the World Cup is happening.
Yes.
But, so two Halloween themed questions. What is your favorite Halloween candy? Like that thing you saw in the bag as a kid and lost your fucking mind about. Number two, what was your favorite Halloween costume that you did growing up?
I figured that might be one of the questions.
Yeah.
Unsurprisingly, my favorite candy is Reese's Pieces.
Yes.
TPCs.
Rightfully so.
I really like those. Shout out, though. It was kind of a surprise because it wasn't as popular, I feel like, but I really enjoyed when I'd get like the bunch of crunch bars.
Yes. Those were good.
I really like those.
Do you want to answer the costume question?
Yeah. Do you know what I'm talking about, Josh?
Are we talking like the blue like crunch bars?
I think it's just crunch bar.
Crunch bar.
Okay.
Yeah. Bunch of crunch is the little
is
like
the little mini ones.
Okay.
Yeah.
I didn't
but
know
it's
those
like
were
the same.
Thing.
I think that those are the same thing.
They are, yeah.
Yeah, I didn't know those were a thing until like high school or probably even college.
Yeah.
I feel like I only ever see them at the movie theater.
Yeah. That's where I usually see them too.
They're at like Target, but like the movie theater is the iconic place to get them.
Honestly, I really liked my costume from this year. I wish I would have got to wear it. I was Walter White. As you can tell by my bald head and my disease, I've actually developed lung cancer following suit.
That's perfect.
We'll definitely have to post it on the podcast account so people can see it.
Yeah, I'll send some pictures that they can use. There's also a great photo of me when I was really young of a costume my grandma made, and that's Larry Boy. That's a crazy
iconic
costume. It goes crazy.
VeggieTales moment for sure.
Yeah.
I would probably say growing up, my favorite candy was, this is going to sound really stupid because this is like a stupid thing, but it was like the pixie stick. I always like, it was like cocaine.
You know, that makes sense with like your childhood. We've talked about it before on the show, but Ethan's like pre-college eating habits, the pixie stick tracks for that.
Wow. Okay. And the, I was also a big fan of Kit Kats. I think there was one more I'm missing out on. Anyway, I was a fit of my costume this year. I went as Popeye, even though I didn't go anywhere. I got like the can of spinach in my hat. I even drawn, you can't see it, tattoos.
What are you gonna do with the spinach now?
I mean, I'll probably eat it.
Well, yeah, but like, are you just gonna like eat it out of the can like Popeye?
Yeah. Yeah.
When I was younger, one of my favorite costumes, because it was badass, was the blue Dino Ranger. And he had all the spikes like on his shoulders. Yes, dude. I felt like such a badass in that costume.
Well, I've got two answers for candy because I can't pick between them, but I was always a bigger, when I was younger, I didn't like chocolate as much. I preferred the like candy. Now I would say I prefer chocolate, but back then it was different. Smarties were always my number one. I don't know why I love them so much. They don't really taste like anything, but I just, I love them so much. Even to this day, I will absolutely chomp down on some Smarties.
It's a solidified,
You're good. All right, were you the kind of person that would like crush them up and then like twist them?
I never snorted them, if that's what you're asking. I definitely did not do that.
Well, some people just turn it into dust.
No, I just like to put it, I just like to eat them like five at a time. Just kind of.
Smarties are, that's fair. They're basically like solidified pixie sticks.
Yeah, it's actually pretty similar flavor-wise.
I'd like to announce real quick, I just received an email from our apartment complex that I won first place in our costume contest.
Let's go.
What a time to be alive. We'll definitely have to post it now. Yeah. The award-winning
prize, a surprise prize at the front office.
Award-winning costumer over here. So my other
you're on the Instagram.
There he is. My other one, which actually tracks pretty well with Smarties, is nerds. Nerds go crazy. I guess I was just manifesting what kind of life I wanted to live. I wanted to be smart and a nerd, I guess. I got one half of those. I'll let you decide which. But my favorite costume, dude, I haven't actually dressed up in so long. Like, I guess today I'm inadvertently Ben Davis, but I didn't really do that on purpose. Someone asked me today if that was my costume, and I was like, no. But I think the last Halloween costume I ever had was when I was probably 11 or 12, and I was Wolverine, which makes sense because my first name is Logan. So it works really well with, you know, the lore. So those are my answers.
I like it. I'm not a big nerd person. They might be like one of my – this is a really – I think they're overrated. They're like one of my least favorite candies. I think they're really good in like the Sonic slushies that you can get them with.
Oh no, that's the worst application of nerds.
I think that, what other applications of nerds are
pouring them straight in your mouth?
True.
Anyway, my favorite candy as a kid in Halloween and still continues now, the Reese's peanut butter cups with the pumpkin, because the ratio is mastered in the season shapes.
I like the
eggs,
the Christmas tree ones,
the Christmas and tree the eggs, the little bunnies.
Anything that's not the normal shape.
The seasonal ones go crazy.
The seasonal ones are stupid.
There's so much more peanut butter, and it's like, I don't know why it's so good, but
so
it is.
Similar to Ethan, I was the red Dino Ranger. For, I think it was like my fourth or fifth year old Halloween. But to make it even better, my dad was Shrek for it.
That's so fitting, too.
Like... it is. And then I think my sister was Fiona, but she was like 8 at the time. So, like, yeah, it wasn't weird. Like, a few years later, it would have been weird. I think they missed the perfect opportunity to make me Donkey, though.
And it ended up being one of your nicknames too.
Yes, I think it would have been fitting for so many reasons later in life to have this picture instead of having Shrek, Fiona, and a fucking Power Ranger. I think Shrek, Fiona, and a fucking donkey.
It might be a little on the nose to have your kid dress up as an ass.
I need to verify this with my dad, but you know what I think happened? This might be completely false. I think he was fully on board with, like, yeah, we need to make him a donkey. And my mom was completely against the idea.
Probably rightfully so.
Yes. Is it rightfully so? I would have thought that was hilarious.
You would now, but what about 8-year-old Josh, who was getting called a donkey?
I don't think 8-year-old Josh would have been inadvertent to the name donkey. I think it just kind of would have happened.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
I mean, my older brother is called Moose. It's like the same thing.
Yeah.
Except it doesn't mean ass. But
Moose is also quite a bit more eloquent of an animal.
They called him donkey, that because he was big, though.
Oh.
Damn. Okay, dude, donkeys don't play any fuck-fuck games, though. They don't play fuck-fuck games. Donkeys don't play any fuck-fuck games.
What does that mean?
Let me explain. At the hunting lease we have, it's in like a super small town down like near Waco. We took a wrong turn like the first time we went there, and this donkey, like on the other side of this fence, is chasing us down the road, screaming like a fucking crazy person, just going, and just like continually.
Thank you for that recreation.
You're welcome. I stopped it at one. Just figured two or three of that wouldn't be eloquent. But yeah, donkeys don't play around. So I'd be completely fine with the nickname donkey or jackass, really whatever floats the boat.
I'm Johnny Knoxville and welcome. This is Donkey. I totally missed that.
And welcome. Dude, this is Donkey.
Welcome to Jack Donkey.
Those movies are so weird.
Yeah, I don't even like Jackass. I think it's so like over the top and annoying.
I think I have to be in the right like state of mind to be able to watch Jackass and not hate my life, because it is rough sometimes.
It is hard to watch because the ones that they do out in public are like, oh gosh, I'm cringing so hard.
Dude, I can't handle like secondhand embarrassment. I can't watch stuff that gives me secondhand embarrassment.
It depends on what it is for me. Like I love Impractical Jokers.
Yeah, I don't. See, it just
that one doesn't bother me. Most of the time, like public embarrassment bothers me, but Impractical Jokers is just insane.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, I feel like they do it well.
For me, the thing with Jackass that makes me so uncomfortable is all the intros, where there are probably like a solid like 15 penises everywhere, painted and like made into weird shit, like a dragon or like a knight, like. I just can't deal
with the intentionally hurting yourself because like just doing stupid shit that ends up getting like everyone gets hurt from it. I can't rock with that. I don't know.
I get it. I mean, I've watched it recently and a lot of it is just hard to watch. The one that did kill me is I think Steve-O got in it was like a porta potty full of shit. He got launched.
Why?
He got launched in the air and all the poop just came out. And he was like, oh shit.
There was one in Jackass Forever that killed me. It was like a coffee food truck thing, and there was something in the front, and there was just like a punching bat, like punching glove, like a boxing glove, fuck, like came through and was just like hitting people in the face. I forget the comedian that was like running the coffee shop. I think his first name's Andre. I can't remember his last name. But he goes up to
Eric Andre.
Yeah, Eric Andre. Yeah,
the giant.
Andre 3000.
After he like walks up to like the person actually working this coffee truck, but except there's a one like at waist level of it. He just like nonchalantly, not expecting it at all, is just like ordering his coffee and just fucking takes it to the crotch. And it is one of those who's just like so painful. It's like, why are you people doing this?
I'm just thinking about the poop rising right now.
Yeah,
like I'll have to find it. It's so funny.
It's so funny, dude. That is a fucking physics problem waiting to happen. Find the inertia.
No, it's not.
Shit in this porta potty.
It's not.
Yes, it is.
It is now.
Okay. Yeah, it is now.
All right. Well, I think it's time to move on to what this podcast is actually about. We've spent enough time talking about Jackass, more time than I ever thought would be dedicated on this. You know, Slapcast and Jackass kind of sound the same if you think about it. I was just realizing that.
We need to do our own episode.
Yeah.
No. I'm getting tased in the dick to make a video.
See, that's what I'm talking about. But
I fall down the stairs all the time. I just need to get a camera rolling.
Do you actually?
Yes.
How?
I literally did it the day we moved in.
Okay, the day you move in, like, kind of makes sense. Like, some stairs have, like, a wider step length than others. Does this happen regularly?
It happened one more time after that.
See, it's not that often. That's just accidents.
It's more than it should happen.
I don't think I've ever fallen downstairs.
Ever?
The amount of times
I really don't think I've ever fallen downstairs.
I've had some bad falls.
Dude,
I'm legitimately trying to think. I'm not even trying to be like any type of way. I'm just seriously, I don't think I've ever fallen down a set of stairs.
You're just built different.
Apparently. But okay. One thing I do want to say before we talk about what the podcast is actually about. I wanted to give a shout out to the guys from the Ball Bag podcast who hit us up on Instagram a few weekends ago, and they're starting out a new show. They're an all-around sports podcast based in Fort Worth, which is cool. That's why they reached out to us. They knew we were kind of all originally based in the Fort Worth area, even though we're kind of in different spots now. But I suppose our home base is still kind of Fort Worth, if you count it as that. So, yeah, shout out to those guys. Go check them out. Give them a follow on Spotify. They've got a couple episodes out already, and they're going to keep going on making content. So shout out to those guys. Thanks for reaching out. And hopefully we'll get to do something with them soon because they were interested in that. So we'll be in touch. Okay. One other news item before we begin, and that is that Steven Gerrard is the latest manager to meet the knife. We talked about it 2 weeks ago and thought that he might get a couple games after the episode that we recorded, but they lost. Who'd they lose to? They lost. They got destroyed by Fulham, and then they pulled the trigger after that and sacked him. Now, does anyone know, is Unai Emery confirmed yet, or yes, is he?
It was. Okay,
so his first game was them getting blown out by Newcastle.
Right. Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
Although I don't know how much time he had in like training before that and stuff.
Yeah. Right.
They Villa like paid a fee to get him off of Villarreal.
Yeah, I did see that. And then they appointed...
He may not have been officially in charge of that game. Like, it may have been a... I don't know. Like, I don't know if he was on the sideline.
Let me do some research.
Where, like, they sit in the stands for the game and see what's going on.
Yeah, I'm not 100% sure. Yeah, he was not actually in charge. I think he would have been in the stands, Josh. You're right. So his first game in charge will be the next fixture. Either way, though, I think we... Are y'all... Do y'all think this was a good time to sack him? I mean,
yes.
Yeah.
I think it was time.
We kind
of talked about it last time. It was like, it was going to be in that window of those games. We thought it would be two or three, but they ended up going with just the one after Fulham. But I think it's probably a good call considering Fulham is kind of their, it's who they're around right now. Right. So.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think we talked about before about how it just feels inevitable that it was going to happen. So just getting it done, I think, is probably the right call. Now, I don't think Gerrard's necessarily a bad manager, but I think Villa might have been a step too far from what he achieved at Rangers, which he obviously was. He did really well at Rangers, but we have this factor of Mick Beale leaving for QPR, which we talked about, you know, ad nauseum. QPR, by the way, who's in a promotion place in the championship at the moment. So all things point to him being the mastermind behind Villa's success under Gerrard at the beginning. And, you know, obviously that's not the only singular factor, but it may be one kind of big element of it. So let's discuss some matches then. And unfortunately, Josh, the first match chronologically is Leicester losing 1-0 to Man City. I know you were contemplating not even watching the game. What did you end up deciding?
I ended up sleeping in and then just watching the replay off of NBC Sports. It was the better decision. I had a very long week and just needed a weekend to relax. So I just watched it, I think, I don't know, sometime Saturday. I forget which time. But it wasn't that bad.
1-0 against City is a respectable result. Like,
yeah, it's one of those, like, we definitely got dominated the first half. I think we had, like, a shot on goal and, like, two shots in total, and they had, like, eight. And then, like, De Bruyne scoring was like, yeah, I kind of sounded like it was going to happen. Yeah.
Yeah.
It was like, makes sense. De Bruyne scoring a screamer to, yeah. Sounds about right. But I was kind of impressed with the Soyuncu and the Woot Faze pairing.
Soyuncu played.
I know. It was the weirdest thing ever. It was like, kind of, it was like, okay, we need a change. And we kind of switched to like a 3-4-1-2 situation with, like, I think having three center backs and then having two like competent wing backs at defending and going forward might be the move going forward, because we don't have any like standout, like, really good center backs right now, because Johnny Evans is injured regularly because of his plantar fasciitis. But I think having the three at the back kind of gives some leeway of some stuff to go wrong. I also think it puts Ward into like better angles on the shots. So I think it allows the forwards to get less near the byline and farther close and forces them to go farther in. So I think that plays to our weaknesses right now. Danny Ward didn't have a bad game. Like the De Bruyne goal, like, yeah, he could have saved it, but that goal was insane. And then I was happy enough for what was going on. Like, I wasn't upset that we lost. I was kind of expecting it. No, overall, not an awful day, but it's City. I kind of was like, yeah, we're going to lose. City looks decent, not their best, but I also think not having Haaland, like, was a huge, a huge
detriment to them.
Thank you. Yeah, I couldn't
they also
think of the word.
They rotated a few others because they have Champions League midweek. So like Ruben Diaz didn't start, Foden didn't start. So
yeah, and then like Akanji played, who that's his like sixth appearance. I think he's been decent-ish. He was pretty good in this game, and so was Julian Alvarez. I was kind of impressed with. I haven't really gotten to see him play much this season, so I was kind of impressed. I think that might have been like the first time I've seen him play.
I think it was his first start. I think I'm right in saying it was his first, at least in the Premier League.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, that was his 10th appearance in the Premier League. Yeah. But yeah, I was like,
really?
Yeah.
I guess he comes on as a late sub.
Eight quite subs. A bit,
okay. So that wasn't his first start then. But
you know, like, I wasn't really expecting much from this game. Like, it was got like in our string of games, this is one of our like last first game. Basically, we have to play the top six like one more time for the most part outside of Liverpool.
Yeah, you outside say you've of played all the top six already.
Yeah, like the only one we have to play twice is Liverpool, but not terrified to play them twice. I think we'd probably scrub out a 1-0 against them, depending on how that goes. But yeah, it's kind of like reiterating and beating a dead horse at this point, but like didn't really expect much, not terribly upset with how we played. I think playing with the formation against City is a good idea. Like, that's a very safe game to do that against, especially with how shaky we've been in defense. I think that was a good game to kind of test it out on, even though it was without Haaland. I still think it was able to test it out, see where we're lacking, see where we can improve. But I think the three at the back might be the way to go, depending on how the winter window goes and if we can actually sign anyone.
Who's in the middle? I'm just curious.
In the middle, usually it's Amardi, but he has a very bad sense of positioning at times. But it's pretty fluid for the most part, but generally it's Amardi in the middle just because he has the least athletic ability out of the three.
Okay.
Because Buffet and Soyuncu are pretty similar. Like, they're both decent on the ball. They both like move well with wingers as well. So having him in the middle, I think, is the best move to do. We play without a defensive mid, which I don't know how I feel, because we played Tielemans and Dewsbury Hall. Dewsbury Hall basically just ran forever, and then Tielemans kind of played in that deep lying free roaming playmaker more than deep lying. But yeah.
All right. Do you have any final thoughts quickly before we move on?
Nope.
Okie dokie. Let's go down the list. And now we get to Spurs, which, to be honest, feels a bit like, because the week that I missed was the two games the Spurs lost consecutively, it feels a little bit like I'm being absolved of my responsibilities here. But believe me, I am obviously happy with the 3 points, but I'm not happy with the way the Spurs are playing at the moment. So I'm not going to go full on kind of, guns blazing on this discussion, but I definitely would have been last week. Obviously, the win kind of cools everyone down, makes me feel quite a bit better, but generally, I just think it's not working for Spurs right now. I don't really know what the problem is, but what I can say is that we were absolutely shocking in the first half. We came out and honestly, nearly all of the players looked like they couldn't be bothered, which I think is a problem that Spurs have dealt with a few times in the past where I honestly don't know. It feels like I'm not going to say this is a broad, man, I can't even get a sentence out. This is a broad sweeping statement, but sometimes it feels like they don't always have the drive to win. Like you see a lot of the best teams are constantly just having the drive to win. They want to go forward and attack and score goals. And I realize the system is part of that, but I just feel like from a mentality perspective, Spurs don't have that killer mentality that they come into their own and really take it to the other team. And there's no killer instinct, I guess. That's really what I'm trying to say. And I feel like Spurs have kind of always had that problem. I guess that's sort of partially where the whole Butler's mentality comes from as well, is just the lack of a killer instinct. And I really feel that way about the team still to this day. The only player I thought who did look up for it in the first half was Højbjerg, as he always does. I think first name on the team sheet for me right now. I want to give a shout out to Bournemouth, of course, before I really get into the nitty-gritty with Spurs, because I thought that they played an excellent first half and they were pretty solid defensively. It's just defending set pieces. They have taken over from Leicester as the worst team in the league at defending set pieces statistically. and they gave up two corner goals in the match as well. But in terms of their actual defensive structure and solidity, I thought they looked really well. I think utilizing Kiefer Moore's strengths, which he actually hasn't been starting because he hasn't scored up until this point since opening day. But I think just utilizing his strength on the ball and his size and his honestly great knack for positioning really was to their benefit in this game. And he obviously scored the brace that put us 2-0 down. I don't 100% know what changed for Spurs. I mean, I guess the moment that it changed was when Sessegnon scored, because Conte was about to make a triple substitution and change things up. And then Højbjerg plays this gorgeous through ball threaded right through the defense, which Sessegnon runs onto. And then it's a lovely finish into the bottom corner. But Højbjerg pulls out these passes occasionally. It reminded me of the one that he had at Old Trafford a few years ago when we beat them 6-1. He had a crazy through ball that split the defense and it led to a goal for Serge Aurier. It was very, very similar. But that was kind of the turning point, because then on comes Lucas Moura. We go back to two in midfield. Davinson Sanchez and Emerson Royale are removed from the game. I hope they're removed from my life permanently, because I'm very tired of watching them play for Spurs. I think the second goal basically just exemplifies my issues with them. Just no ability to make decisions. Completely left flabbergasted by Kiefer Moore just making a simple run into the box. Neither of them can pass the ball. Emerson Royale's crossing is getting worse. And also, I wanted to make a special shout out to the fact that he had a shot that went out of the stadium in the first half. Like it actually cleared the top of the stand.
Okay, to be fair, it is Bournemouth.
I think it would have cleared most stadiums.
It's Bournemouth, dude.
It was vertical. It was, I mean, that thing went into orbit. Vertical. Like,
is it the volley?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's the civil one.
They're going to be fishing that out of the Atlantic at some point, because, I mean, that just is one of the worst shot attempts I've seen from anyone in a long time.
It was awful, but it's also Bournemouth. Like, that's a, like.
I get it. And I'm being slightly hyperbolic, but seriously, I mean, a professional footballer should not be sending shots out of the stand.
No, but also a middle schooler could probably punt it over Bournemouth's.
If they were trying to, sure.
Yeah. But just beside the point, not the point.
Anyway, yeah. So we changed up the system again and went to two in midfield, which I thought actually worked, except for the fact that Lucas Moura was horrific when he came on. Did not contribute hardly at all, which it was bizarre to me that he was the choice following a really, really good cameo from Brian Hill against Sporting. I really would have liked to see Brian Hill come on and you know, get that half hour instead of being the auxiliary substitution like he was. It obviously doesn't matter because we won the game, but I thought Lucas was terrible. But here's what I do want to point out. If Christian Romero is unavailable, throw Davinson Sanchez in the garbage and revert to the three that we had at the end of the game, which was Clement Longley in the middle, Eric Dyer on the right, and Ben Davis on the left, because Dyer actually impressed me with a few of his forward runs. And of course, he's far more defensively sound than Davinson Sanchez in general. So I think that is the answer for when Christian Romero is unavailable. I highly suspect that Davinson Sanchez will continue to play, as will Emerson Royal, because I don't really understand why, but Conte's loyal to them for some reason. So I think they'll probably continue to get games. Benson Kerr coming on absolutely changed the game. I thought Skip was decent. I was a little bit sad to see him go off, but Benton Kerr completely changed the game. Bissouma was not good again. I think he's really struggled at Spurs. I think we would benefit from him having an uptick in form. I think his tactical role is a benefit, which allows, as I've mentioned, Højbjerg and Benton Kerr to have a bit more freedom going forward. But I think on a personal level, his performances have been pretty poor overall. So, of course, Benton Kerr also scored the winning goal, which helps. But I just think in terms of his play in general, he's just a step above, and he completely transformed Spurs' midfield when he came on, even though they were down a man in midfield at that point because of the system change. So all in all, I'm pretty unhappy with Spurs right now. Obviously, I was thrilled to get the win, but I think I'm genuinely worried that we might go out of the Champions League this week because we have this controversial VAR decision in midweek that robbed us of a last minute winner has now meant that we have a shootout with Marseille on the last game week, which is tomorrow, actually, at time of recording. It'll be today when the episode comes out. And I'm actually a little bit worried that we might not get through the group. So I don't know.
What was the score of the previous one?
The previous Marseille game?
Yeah.
2-0 us. But it was also a really boring and tepid affair until Marseille got sent off. I mean, the whole team got sent off. Bemba got sent off.
Was he else home leg or away leg?
Home. So this one's in France. Stadium
is beautiful. Outside of the game, that stadium is amazing.
It is really awesome. However, they are closing two of the stands because they're having issues with riots and violence and stuff. So the atmosphere won't be as difficult for Spurs to go into, but it's still not an easy place to go, I think. One final point I wanted to mention. Let me actually check my notes and make sure I'm not skipping anything. Right. One final point is that this week was the 1-year anniversary of Spurs appointing Antonio Conte after sacking Nuno. I just kind of want to give a roundtable question to the group in general. And that's mostly how you guys as outsiders, how do you view Conte's tenure at Spurs? I know I've probably tinted your opinion a little bit, but how do you guys view Conte's tenure so far at Spurs, if you could summarize it?
I was gonna ask you about this ish, but it feels a lot like Jose's tenure. Like, it's just improving enough over the last guy, because the last guy's ending was so bad that it makes it seem good. And then now, like, as it's starting to progress out, and like everything last year was like, oh, let's wait and see what happens when Conte brings in who he wants. And then we see where that landed. So it feels almost like, obviously, similar styles ish.
Yeah.
But
I think it's similar to, like, in terms of the way the team is progressing. Cause it's like he comes in, you have an uptick of form, things are positive around the club. Now, general play style, I feel like, I mean, I brought it up. I don't even remember which game it was now, but I think I mentioned that it felt like I was watching Mourinho again.
I think it was the Forest game.
Yeah, like, I think some of the play has kind of regressed at times, not all the time, but just at times. And right now there's like some weird fixtures. Obviously, you got the win in this game, but it's like 3-2 against Bournemouth is like really, really close, right? And Bournemouth are a good side. They've been doing really well after the 9-0, but...
But it's a game the Spurs should win.
Yeah. So I feel like it's been extremely average right now. Like, good enough not to get sacked, not good enough to warrant like a lot of praise.
I mean, the way I look at it, I think his tenure so far has been fine, but I feel like the big issue with Spurs managers over the past few seasons is that they'll do fine, but then the results are just so inconsistent to where it like kind of taints how the manager looks. Cause I mean, you know, you did pretty good. Like you've gotten a lot of good results under Conte, but like, it's just like some of them, like the inconsistency is just kind of like not making him look good right now.
Yeah. And kind of, I think y'all talked about this during the summer transfer window when we weren't signing anyone and I wasn't on the podcast. Y'all said something about like, fine is not the way to do things. Like, yes, the squad is fine, but if you're not getting better, everyone else is getting better around you. And that's exactly what's happened to Spurs. Like, yes, they've gotten better. Like, they got above the standard they were at. But then everybody else around them, like, look at Arsenal. Look how much better they've gotten under Arteta. What is wrong with me today?
Jesus, man.
I can't speak. But yeah, like every like kind of what y'all said, like when we weren't signing anybody, that's kind of what Tottenham are going through with their managers right now.
Speaking of signings too, and I don't know if this is a Conte issue or a higher up the board issue. I don't know if he was ambitious enough in the summer. Like I feel like there's just a few key areas that y'all could have really benefited from, like really investing in. Like a star center
right
back.
Wing back.
Yeah, or a right wing back, or you know, and I think I mean, even on the left side, I think Perisic is a good signing, but he's also old. So it's like bringing in somebody, and I think it's good to tie over, right? But it's like bringing in somebody that, I don't know, just shows a little bit more ambition. And he's worked with him before too, so that helps. But
yeah,
you know,
there is a succession plan for that though, I think.
Yeah, yeah.
But because you do GA, we
the main issue is, right, it's like right wing back, center back,
yeah,
maybe like really investing in those areas.
Yeah. So I'm having to do a lot of examination on the way I feel about this, because on the one hand, I'm inclined to agree with you guys in the sense that Spurs are horrible to watch, which I think is the first and foremost thing that you notice is they don't pass the eye test, which was basically one of our biggest complaints about them under Mourinho and Nuno, right? Was that they look terrible, which, you know, if it walks like a duck and quacks like a duck, it's probably a duck, right? And the reason I'm kind of having to step back from that a little bit is because if you think about the end of last season, Spurs won, what was it, 7 of their last 9 to get into the Champions League, including, which this is not a win, but a great draw against Liverpool, a huge win over Arsenal. You know, you get the point, right? Then we make some signings in the summer. I agree with you guys that they weren't ambitious enough, given the grand scheme of things. Right now, I think the other big issue is that for the last few weeks, we've been without arguably the system's most important player in Dejan Kulusevski. He's been injured for the past several weeks, right? Which I think is really detrimental to the way that Spurs play going forward, because he's essentially, other than Højbjerg and Bentancur a little bit, Kulusevski's the only designated creative player in the side. Because even if you play Richarlison, who's also injured, he's not a creative player, right? So I think myself and Spurs fans in general are having a hard time tempering our expectations with that, because we should have signed someone who is also a designated creative player in the summer. Like whoever made the decision to pass on the Christian Eriksen signing should be euthanized. Seriously. Because apparently he was fully willing to commit to the deal and Spurs passed on him, which is mind boggling to me. But all this being said, I think and this is me being optimistic about Spurs, which almost never happens, but I think it looks worse than it is right now because of the injuries. And I also think that the squad was so bad that it's going to take more than one transfer window to fix it fully.
Yeah.
Right. So as long as we see continual investment in the team in January and then next summer, provided that Conte doesn't walk, which is always kind of a coin toss, it's hard to evaluate, because
it's also like we were having this conversation about Arsenal when we were in 20th. Like y'all are in third right now. Right.
Right.
So like,
I know, that's the weird thing. Like, yeah, it's like it looks so bad, but
yeah,
it just, yeah. Now one final point that I do have. The other difference between this and Mourinho is that Spurs have now started winning the games that they're supposed to win. Like, we haven't dropped points to anyone suspect this season. Like, we lost to Arsenal, which is fair enough. We dropped points to Chelsea away, which is fair enough. We lost to United away, which, whatever. And
they
then
beat most of the top six.
Right. And then so we lost to Newcastle, which, fair enough. You might say Spurs should beat them, but they're in really good form. They're playing well. They've got an investment of cash flow, et cetera. Right. So we haven't dropped points to anyone suspect yet. Knock on wood. But I think that's another big difference, because Spurs would actually beat teams like City and, well, they never beat Liverpool, but City, like Arsenal, Man United under Jose, but then we would lose to your Bournemouths, your Brightons, your whoever's, right? And I think that's one big difference as things are going right now. So anyway, I think that'll wrap my discussion on Spurs. If you guys have any final thoughts as well, though, always welcome. Okay, let's continue down the list of games. Now, we've got one to discuss quickly before we get to Palace. I'll get this out of the way first. That is Brighton utterly demolishing their former manager, Graham Potter, with a 4-1 scoreline. The one thing that I really want to point out, because I don't think I've ever seen a manager do this, is changing goalkeepers at halftime. This is a very NHL thing to do, is if you're getting shelled in the first half or the first period, to come out in the second period with a new goalie. And that's what they did. And I just thought it was interesting. It obviously didn't work. It galvanized them a little bit, but
well, in the second half, they would have tied. So,
yeah. Yeah, true.
I don't really think Kepa had a bad game, though. Like, there was two goals. So,
yeah, the first one he was probably slightly at fault for, but the other two, not so much.
It is funny that more Chelsea players scored and they still lost.
Yeah. That was really funny. I looked at the scoreline at halftime and who scored. I was like, oh my God, then there's no way. But I also, like, with the five subs now, if your keeper is having a bad game and you have Kepa and Mendy as your two goalies, I don't hate the move to switch it up a little bit with five subs now. I think it makes sense to do that.
Yeah.
But also, like, their keeper tandem is insane. Like, I would take either or at Leicester right now.
It just makes me happy to see them.
Me too. Because they've been so good under Potter, and it's funny that the team that they get exposed by is the like legacy of Graham Potter.
Yeah. So two own goals. That's tough.
Yeah, and I mean, Loftus Cheek.
Yeah. The own goals themselves, they're not like horrendous own goals. They're kind of ones where the defender has to put it in a challenge. Otherwise, there will be a player there to finish it. And it just kind of deflected off of them. You know, it's one of those. Can't really do anything about it, but it just makes me happy.
The fourth goal was a clown show for Chelsea at the back too, yeah. Which I really enjoyed watching that. Watching Thiago Silva get carved by Julio Enciso and Pascal Gross. I'm always a big fan for that. So I don't really think this means anything for Chelsea, though, because I think they're still in a transitional phase. And given the state of their results, I think they're fine. But they do have Arsenal up next. I think this was their
first loss under Potter.
It was, yeah. Although they do have Arsenal up next. So that's going to be a big test, I think.
Yeah.
Okay. We'll leave that there because there's not, you know, it's just a kind of a cool storyline and an interesting one. But we will move on to Crystal Palace now, who earned a win over Southampton, which I told Ethan this. I was like, we have noticed this pattern where every time Leicester lose, everyone else, all three of our other clubs win. So, and vice versa. So
I forgot about that.
We should have known that it was going to go well whenever we saw Leicester lose in the morning.
I mean, when Leicester won before this past game week, I think all of our teams didn't win. I think Arsenal got, yeah. So it's just the law. So I'm sorry, Josh, you're the odd one.
I'm going to need y'all to start being shit, all of y'all.
You're the odd one outside.
Exactly.
Anyway, this was the first day where I started feeling really sick. I woke up. I could not move my body to save my life. So when
you're welcome.
Yeah, Reese gave me a smooch in the middle of the night.
Yeah,
and it was the devil's kiss or something because I could barely get up. Yeah, he is. But I could barely like I was just on my stomach and I was like, ooh. And when I saw that we went 1-0 up, through Edward, I was like, I couldn't even celebrate. I was just like, but I thought we looked really well in the first half. You know, let me look at the team sheet real quick. I'm gonna pull that up. Before I start talking about the first half, the second half, we had to do a little bit more defending because obviously, you know, when you go into halftime winning, the other team's obviously going to, you know, try their best to try new things and, you know, try and get ahead. But yeah, I was worried because in the Everton game that we've lost 3-0 to away, we were out without Decore. And I was like, this is the worst possible time this could happen because he had 5 yellow cards, so he had a suspension. And so I was like, okay, he'll be back and it'll be fine. Apparently he's not back because he wasn't even on the bench. So we had to play Milivojevic again. And so I was like, oh nope, I'm not gonna win. So but thankfully we were able to get a 1-0 win. I thought Luka looked fine, but going forward, he's just not someone I want to see play too often. Maybe like in the last 20 minutes to see out the game. But I'm very happy with Edouard, you know, keeping up the consistency. I think he scored 3 goals in the last 3 home games.
And can I just say real quick, you have the kindest way of saying that you never want to see Luka play ever again. Like, well, you just said, I think he looked fine, but I just don't really want to see him play there again.
I think a lot worse in my head. I just don't want to say it because I always feel like the podcast is going to like blow up maybe. And then there are all the players are going to see it. And then they're going to have like a.
They all already listen, actually.
Yeah. So like when I called Lissandro Martinez a dirt dweller, I thought he was going to see it. And that man could literally buy my whole life. So I had to apologize right away. So, I mean, he's been a good servant over the past few seasons. Obviously, you know, grinds my absolute gears, but he looked fine this game. But I thought this was a funny stat. All the goals that Edouard has scored have all been in London.
Oh wow.
So he's just a London player basically.
Apparently.
So if we ever have an away day outside of London, don't play him. But Olise started again, which was something I like to see. It was funny, recently some of the Palace players had a meeting with Arsene Wenger at the French ambassadorship or something like that. And they were all talking and Wenger told Olise that he needed to score more goals. And Vieira was just like, no, he was just like holding him like a son. It was just funny. But I think he will score goals eventually. I think right now he's just, you know, trying to work on his team play a little bit. So I thought that was fine. But yeah, this was our third home game in a row that we've won. And so it's basically Fortress Selhurst right now. I'm really liking how we're playing at home because it looks like in all the games that we've been playing, except for the Southampton one this last weekend, we've come from behind. You know, the other team scoring first and then we respond right away. So I'm really happy with our persistence to, you know, get a result from a losing position. So,
and with that result, y'all are in the top half now.
Yeah, I think we're 10th right now.
Yeah,
so we're 10th. Just on the borderline right now. So, yeah, I mean, I'm very happy with how we're playing.
Tied on points with Liverpool, by the way.
That's wild.
I mean, I'm just saying we're on the better club. Right now, so, very happy with how we're playing right now. Crazy to think that was our last home game before the World Cup.
Yeah.
So the next time we're playing is, I think, Fulham at home, which
it sounds like
Boxing Day.
Yeah. So I'm gonna double check that. I don't look like an ass, but it's crazy that it's like so far away.
Yeah, what, I think it's like 3 games until the World Cup.
I think we have
2 more.
I think we have 2.
Yeah,
but
good God,
yeah.
I'm getting so hyped for the World Cup.
I am hyped. But
you are right, Ethan. It's Fulham on Boxing Day.
Yeah, it is. It's just crazy to think about because we're so not used to having a World Cup at this time of the year.
Oh yeah, dude, I've had friends, what's been getting me hype is I have friends in RTC who know like I do the podcast and they're like, is this our year? And I'm like, no, it's the build-up to our year. It's never been our year. It's a build-up to the possibility of us being, of it being our year.
The answer is no, unless we're playing a match, and then I'm going to say yes.
Yeah, that's right.
That's also the law. But yeah, I mean, I've had people, I've had to tell people that the World Cup's happening. They're like, oh, that's, it's happening this year. And I'm like, if they played it in the summer, then they would probably all die of heat stroke.
Yeah.
In Qatar, so. Yeah,
I think Fox has it.
Yeah.
Why remind me of that?
Dude, but on the positive side, we have all the Mexican commentators.
Dude, he better be back. I need, what's his name? I need to look it up. I need to figure out what his name is.
I forgot it, but that guy was
Snake
crazy.
Connects with the Predator.
Yeah, that guy was, I love that man. He is the GOAT.
World Cup soccer on Thanksgiving, I'm gonna lose my mind.
And there's a possibility, it sounds like we all might be together for the US England game on Friday.
We'll have to, and the Stars game that day is gonna go crazy.
That's gonna be a fun day for sure
together for that. But yeah, our next few games are, I think I want to say West Ham and then Nottingham Forest, so I'm feeling pretty confident about the Forest game. Maybe not so much the West Ham game just because of our past results with them. But I think if we could at least get one more win out of those two before the World Cup, I think I would be very confident for the rest of the season going forward.
I want to give a feature quickly just before we move on from Palace to someone that we've talked about a lot on the podcast. And that's Tariq Mitchell, who I thought had a really good game again. He got the assist on the goal, but I think just – He's a workhorse. He's just constantly up and down the touchline. Really good on the ball. Of course, he may, you know, might have some work to do defensively still, but that's fine. He's a young player. I think I've been just impressed with him every time I've watched him.
Yeah, I actually saw this article from Matt Woosnam from The Athletic. He's a Palace fan, worked for The Athletic, so we have a lot of love for The Athletic. He wrote an article called What's Eating Tariq Mitchell, kind of like What's Eating Gilbert Grape. But he was basically talking about, you know, what's going on with him and, you know, the times that he has had good games and the time that, like, he'll have, like, an off game or something like that. And, like, what could be the reasons for that. I've been fine with him this season. I think he's been really good. I watch this goal all the time, but it's the Mateta goal from the Villa game, where he like just whipped it in. It was a perfect cross. That was like one of his best games I've ever seen for him. He looked good in this game as well. I think the one thing that, like, you know, he's still young. He doesn't really have too much competition in his position. So, you know, it is just kind of know, can he continue to perform like that without, you know, worrying about, you know, will his spot be given up? So, I think for now he'll still be fine. He'll still keep up the performance, but you know, he just has to hopefully get some competition soon, and then, you know, just be more confident going forward. I critiqued his, you know, his buildup, maybe in the sense of, you know, driving forward, but I think he's improved on that since as well. And I think what carries his progression a lot is his passing. Because obviously I just talked about his cross, and then he got an assist in this game too to Edouard. So yeah, I'm very happy with him. So I do think that's a position we need to maybe strengthen going forward. But I think for now, I'm very happy with how he's playing.
Okie dokie. Let's move along now and just give a cursory mention as we should to Liverpool losing another game. Which I think I'm right in saying, someone correct me if I'm not, but this is their first loss at Anfield in over 2 years.
Yeah, because it broke the Van Dijk stat that he hadn't lost to Anfield.
Yeah, which is crazy, by the way. But yeah, Crescencio Somerville, a player who I told Reese I had never even heard of before he scored this last-minute winner, even though I went back and looked and he actually scored last week too. So apparently I've been living under a rock. But
yeah, he's been coming on.
Yeah, he scored a last-minute winner. One of the weirdest looking goals I've ever seen. Just the way that he, I didn't even see him shoot.
Yeah.
It's like the ball just moved. It was so odd. I don't know.
How did he get that off?
Yeah. I think the commentator said, I don't even think Allison was expecting him to shoot. And I think that's part of why it went in. It's just,
yeah.
it came off so randomly, but yeah. And it, the day before his 21st birthday too, the man is on cloud nine for sure. And rightfully so. Yeah. Leeds and Jesse Marsh needed that win badly because they were on a downward slide. Do we think he's going to survive the season though, fellas? I mean,
I do. I think their performances haven't really warranted the results previously. I think they've had a couple of really harsh games. Even looking at the game against us, like we absolutely robbed them of a win in that game.
Yeah.
And then like, even they absolutely dominated majority of that game.
Even the Leicester game, that one could have gone both ways. Like it could have gone like any three ways. Like could have been, they could have won, we could have won, or it could have been a draw.
Like, that is how football works.
I do think though this game is like the reset, and the results are going to start balancing themselves out and start matching up with the performances.
I sent this in the group chat on Twitter earlier today. That found this picture just scrolling through Twitter today. It's just like kid who's probably like 8 years old in a Leeds kit with like a Leeds picture behind him, who has a water bottle with a Klopp's tears written on it, and he's just drinking from it. And the shithousery from the young lads in England is just so funny to me.
I keep seeing this TikTok or like video, and it's like this guy is doing his predictions for the season, and he's like, I've got the current champions Man City at second, and then I've got the pool at first, and then it just goes through all the results that Liverpool have had so far. It's just all complaining. It's like the
Vine boom.
Yeah. But he's just hearing him complain. It's good.
Y'all think Klopp will still be their manager next August?
Yeah.
Yeah, I do.
I don't think they have the cojones to fire him.
I don't think they have the cojones to fire him, but I also could see them wanting to try something new depending on how the rest of the season goes.
I think it's he does have style. The seven season syndrome thing. So I you know, it is possible that he might walk or
I think they might mutually agree.
Yeah.
And just be like, yeah, I don't think it's working anymore. Everybody's figure out how to beat Liverpool. Not everyone, obviously, but like generally like the idea to beat Liverpool like is pretty easy at this point. But I'm starting to lean that direction of like, oh, I think they're going to mutually agree to depart. I think he might take a season or two. Because like with all the yes, he does complain a lot, like which you can agree with or not. But like the stress that probably puts on him added to like what it already is to be a manager, you would think that
he's just a complainer.
He is a complainer. But I don't know. I think his time at Liverpool is like slowly fading away.
I mean, he's definitely on the back nine for sure, but I just don't, you know, I if I were a betting man, which I would be if it was legal in Texas, I would bet that he would still be there. But that's just me personally. I don't really know why. I don't even have a logical reason to back that up. I just think he'll be there for at least another season or two.
I'm still shocked you can't bet in Texas. That's like of all the things you can do in Texas. The things you can't do is kind of wild to me.
I mean, you can.
What are you talking about? I don't know what a VPN is.
Yeah.
I'm a boomer.
Yeah, I am a little surprised by it too. You know, maybe if Beto wins the election, he should his name literally has the word bet in it. He should campaign on this.
Bet
with Beto.
The marketing.
Come on. I'm just saying it's easy. But anyway. That was really stupid. So something that is also really stupid from my perspective, but not so from Reese's, is the fact that Arsenal have yet again had another team bend over and take it for them.
Come on.
No, come on. That's actually what happened.
That is actually what happened, but I'm being a little bit of a shithouse. Forest are really bad though, to be fair, but Arsenal are also really good. So let's, you know,
I'd be remiss credit where not to mention, similar to Gage, the week off we had was when we had our worst performances of the season by far. The Leeds game, which we won, but we looked bad. The Southampton game, which we did not win, we drew. And it was basically the same thing as the Leeds game. We just weren't able to rob them in the end. So it was like we played well, got an early goal, and then just like I don't know, second half we just got dominated essentially. And then the PSV game in the Europa League, which we lost like pretty comfortably. It was like a pretty easy win for PSV. I was trying to I was trying to think of what like the reason for this was, and I think it comes back to the Zinchenko injury, because we've just lost a little bit of what was making us really like tactically good in possession with Zinchenko coming in and playing as like an extra midfielder. And instead, the solution to that seems we've been doing it since the Liverpool game, which I was surprised we stuck with it. I thought, and this is the Tomiyasu at left back. I thought this was a Liverpool only thing because we were trying to use a right-footed player against Salah, which I think was the original intent. We stuck with it since then. And for a couple games, I didn't really understand it. I figured, why don't we just play Tierney? Because he's left-footed. But I think now we come to this game, and it is Forest, and they're in 20th, but we played a lot better just compared to the past three games, PSV, Southampton, and Leeds. And I think what it is we just, at least that left side gelled in this game. And I think the thought process for Tomiyasu at left back now might be, oh, well, if we don't have Zinchenko, who is more like a midfielder who can play left back, adds that dimension. You instead have a practically two-footed player in Tomiyasu, where if he cuts inside to go more on the midfield, like centrally, he's not uncomfortable on his right foot as he's cutting in. And but he can still link up with Martinelli on the left because he can put his left foot. Excuse me. So I think that gelling on the left side was really important in this game. And yeah, I think that's probably what's been missing in the past couple. I think it's a huge result coming off the back of those few games, because a lot of people were saying like, oh, you know, Arsenal's finally faltering, which I kind of agree with. We had kind of were showing a little bit of our limits, right? Because I think we are a little bit overachieving right now. But I also think, you know, at least in the Prem, people were, a lot of the narrative was that we are now faltering, we're about to go down the table, but we didn't lose. Like, it's neither of these games were losses, it was a win and a draw. And then we bounced back against Nottingham Forest, which I think it's really important, because it's a team you should win, and it's a team you should win with five goals, honestly. Like, it's one of those games where you expect to score a lot of goals. And especially with the way we looked in the Leeds and Southampton game, where we go up early and then kind of I don't know if it's intentional, but it looks like we just sit on the lead in the second half. To come out in the second half, because we were only up 1-0 in the first half, to come out and get four goals in the second half instead of kind of sitting back, shows at least some intention to not do that, whether or not it was intentional that they were doing it in the first place. You know, some disappointing news is that Saka got injured in this game. Early reports are kind of saying he should be okay for the Chelsea game, and that it was more precautionary, like we didn't want to risk anything. But it was definitely worrying at the time. But Reece Nelson came on. He has not really played for us in a while. He's been alone, but he's still only 22, still really young. People forget he broke into the team when he was really young as well. And yeah, he took his chance really well. He got two goals and an assist. Really great performance from him. Partey scoring the exact same goal that he scored against Spurs. So like I mentioned, he's been practicing, I guess. I don't know. He's got that angle now. He's been getting closer and closer. Now that he got that one in, he's just going to keep getting it in from the same spot. I think the most important thing was that we basically took the previous performances where didn't look very good. We fixed exactly what needed to be fixed, which was that we just kind of looked complacent in the lead. And we did it in time for the Chelsea game too. And I think if we can get a good result against Chelsea, then I don't even remember who we have after that, but presumably we can get a good result in the next fixture as well. And then there's the World Cup break. So then we have time for our players to get healthy again, and then we'll hopefully have Zinchenko back. So I actually think we talked about the World Cup possibly being bad for Arsenal, and that it's going to kind of halt our momentum, but it could be good in the sense that It'll allow us to kind of regroup, and unless some more injuries happen during the World Cup, which would be bad, but could allow us to regroup in terms of like Zinchenko coming back.
Your last game before the World Cup is Wolves, and they're absolutely terrible. So
yeah, I think... so if we can get a result against Chelsea, that should be able to propel us through to the World Cup. And that would be really huge to go into that top of the table. Would be really cool.
Of course, we also do have, we'll probably talk about it a little bit more next week, but we do have EFL Cup is finally showing up. I don't know why. I guess I do know why. It's because the condensed schedule, but none of the big clubs have played any of the EFL Cup matches yet, because they obviously have a bye in the second round. So Spurs and Arsenal, and I think did Leicester have a bye, or did they play?
We had a bye because we made it to the quarterfinal.
Okay, yeah. So Spurs, Arsenal, and Leicester all haven't played yet. So that'll be an interesting one. Just another fixture that gets crammed in before the World Cup. But yeah, I think you're going to see a lot of rotation in that particular item. Reese, do you think that, you know, I'm assuming that there hasn't been too much of a concrete update on Saka, because there never really is. Do you think that at least until the World Cup, Reese Nelson has earned a starting spot then?
I think if Saka's fit, he'll play in the Chelsea game. I think Reese Nelson.
I know. I'm just saying, like,
is he fit though? So the only report I've seen is that he should be okay for the Chelsea game. If he's not fit, then yeah, I think Reese Nelson is the guy who's gonna replace him in that spot.
Okay. Probably an obvious answer, but you never know. We'll finally mention that West Ham got a very narrow win over they did not beat themselves. Man United got a very narrow win over West Ham, 1-0, a goal from Marcus Rashford. West Ham did almost score an equalizer at the end, but unfortunately for them, it did not go in, obviously.
I want to say that was Rashford's 100th goal for the...
It was, yeah.
Either United or... Okay, it had to be for United, because I was going to say Premier League goal, but he's only played for United in the Premier League, so...
Well, I'm guessing that would have been... It's definitely not his 100th Premier League goal. It's
no. Yeah, it's like
all competitions. Yeah.
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 I'm trying to see how many goals he has in the Prem. Oh, I mean, 63 in the Prem is not nothing. So he probably will make it to 100 if he stays in the league, I think. But yeah. West Ham is kind of an interesting one. I think they're kind of underachieving compared to what everyone thought they would be doing. But they're kind of just a nothing burger this season. Like, I haven't really heard anyone talking about them, us included. I don't really know what they are. I don't know what the deal is with them.
Have Get in the comments played them?
If you're around.
I don't think. I know we haven't.
Oh, yes, we did. I'm stupid. We dropped points to them. That's the one suspect game that we did drop points in. But they were terrible. Spurs were really bad too, but West Ham were terrible in that game. I forgot about that. It was midweek. But, yeah. I think that'll just about do in terms of discussing all of these fixtures from the week, which means it's time to adjourn from the Premier League discussion and sojourn to Ethan's album of the week.
Yes, sir. So while I've been asleep and recovering from my illness, I've been listening to Cream. Look at this groovy album cover. This is an Eric Clapton band, one of his first. You might also know him from Derek and the Dominoes. Everyone knows Sunshine of Your Love. That was a Guitar Hero 3 classic. My favorite is Strange Brew. It's the first song on the first side. Pretty gnarly album. So I'd definitely give it a listen.
Can I contribute to an album of the week?
Absolutely.
Okay, give me one second. Josh, you go.
Okay, so mine will be a little bit longer than normal. But so this is the closest thing that like motorsports gets to a jersey. It's like a team shirt. It's kind of what like all the overalls look like and like the pit crew members look like. So mine is Kyle Busch's NASCAR one from this year. So he drives the Toyota Camry, M&M's number 18, because they have to say the sponsor with every time they say their car in the interview. But So I think he's my favorite driver. It's kind of one of those things where it's like I picked it because the M&Ms was just iconic at NASCAR, and it's this last season before it leaves at the end of the year.
Oh, that's a bummer.
It is a real bummer. I didn't know bummer. That. Yeah.
I always remember Elliot Sadler when we were kids is the one who drove the M&Ms car.
Yeah, so it's like also part of the reason why Kyle Busch is leaving Toyota, and he drove there like his whole career, won two championships with Toyota and Joe Gibbs Racing. So the championship races this weekend, I encourage anyone to go watch it and try out NASCAR. If it's not for you, it's not for you, but try a new sport, see what happens. It's basically like it's a round of 16 and works minuses four every three races when the playoffs start. There's four left, and yeah, I prediction I'm going to go with Christopher Bell wins his first championship, who's also one of my favorite drivers. He also races for Joe Gibbs and Toyota, so he's been really fun to watch this season and had like two walk-off races the last two rounds of the playoffs when he has had like horrible luck, but then walked it off with a win in the last round that advanced to the next round. But second thing to go along with this is, if you haven't seen it yet, this is kind of wild. And the race this weekend at Martinsville is basically, so it's shaped like a paperclip. And this dude needed to beat this one guy. He needed to be within like two spots of this one guy to go to the championship race. Normally, like, you have to slow down super hard into the corners, and like the max you're going to go around this track is like 92, 93. It's on the last lap, and he has to catch up at least two spots, and there's no one even close in front of him. He speeds up out of like the second turn going into the other half of the paperclip, goes as fast as possible, leans it against the wall and crashes it, and just rides the wall out. Goes like 108 miles an hour and sets the record for the fastest lap ever at this racetrack.
The fact that this clip, yeah, the fact that it's like trending on TikTok should show everything, because like no one except Josh and like Billy Bob care about NASCAR.
Fuck you, I hate you.
Hi, Billy Bob.
Also, former guest of the podcast, Jacob Daly.
I hope you get a coughing fit during your album. Go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to like. It's a cool clip. It's a cool clip.
It is a cool clip. It was cool. Like, he catches up to the guy and like passes the guy he needed to like go ahead of on points to win, to go to the championship race. The dude is a seventh generation watermelon farmer.
Shout out to Ross Chastain.
Yes.
I thought you were just going to end it at watermelon. He's a seventh generation watermelon.
No, so this dude, like, after every win, he stands on top of the car and smashes a watermelon on the ground. I was at his first win at Circuit of the Americas in Austin and got to see it live. It was pretty cool.
It's pretty hysterical.
Mm-hmm.
So I think this came in a week ago or maybe 2 weeks ago, but it was my birthday gift from like all my close friends, because I've wanted this album for so long. And it's the Wind Rises soundtrack, which is a Ghibli movie. And I have wanted this album so long, because it's like my favorite. I love Ghibli movies. It's not my favorite Ghibli movie, but it's my favorite Ghibli soundtrack. But all of the Ghibli soundtracks are so expensive, and so it was like the last thing I was expecting. But all my close friends chipped in and got it, so it was really hype. But yeah, we also rewatched the movie when it came in.
So good.
Such a good movie. I encourage everyone to watch it. The director is like, Hayao Miyazaki, his like second love is planes, and then he always has some kind of flying machine and some kind of anti-war message in his movies, and then this movie is just about planes and about anti-war. So like it's the feeling you get when you hear someone talk about something they're really passionate in, but like that's what you feel when you watch the movie, because he just cares so much about it. So it's like super, super good movie. The soundtrack's fantastic. I'll show the cover again. It's really cool. But yeah, it's like a, I don't even know how to describe the vibe of the music. It's kind of like a, I don't know, almost like, I don't know. It's hard to explain. It's just listen to it. It's really good.
Does it have like an anime feel to it?
No, it's like a very, it's orchestral. Look what you did. You did this to
He's
me.
He's getting choked up about it.
Yeah. it feels like you're flying. It's like very airy, and like dreamlike. And there's a couple dreamlike sequences. Yeah, there's like a dream. There's a couple dream sequences in the movie. That's like a big part of it. So the soundtrack is very dreamy, and it's all about like following your dreams and stuff. So yeah, it's super good.
Very touching movie.
Sweet. I guess I'll chip in an album too, because Polyphia's new album, Remember That You Will Die, released on
my brother just Friday. Riley texted me and was like, have y'all ever heard of Polyphia? And I was like, yeah.
It's like, oh brother. Yeah. They're revolutionizing the way people play guitar. So yeah, great album. Go give it a look. It's unbelievable. It should win a Grammy. It's not going to, but that's the way it is. So excellent. All right. That will wrap us up for today, fellas. Thanks for joining us. Josh, thank you for being along.
Thanks for having me. I enjoyed it. It was a good little podcast. I enjoyed the beginning, and I like when we like can branch off and kind of like show our own interests. I think today kind of showed that a little bit. I like it.
Most excellent. And the infirmary ward, thanks for showing up, fellas. Ethan and Reese, of course.
Yeah.
Hopefully, I'm glad we were well enough to be on.
Hopefully we're in better spirits next time. We don't sound like this.
Yeah. All right. And thanks to you, the listeners, of course, for sticking around. Hopefully you didn't miss us too much last week. We figured we'd give you a week off from all the insane content that was no doubt expanding your mind. We figured we'd give you a break from that. So that's the way it is. We want to say a huge thanks for listening. We hope you're all we hope you're all safe and healthy. We hope you're enjoying the Premier League, and it's a goodbye from us.